This is the Humanitarian Hour on Radio Miraya with Ivan Omosha.
This is a Humanitarian Hour with me, Regina Gorle. We already have our guest here with me in the studio. We have Peter Walsh. He is the country director, Save the Children, here in South Sudan. And he's going to give us more activities or what the Save the Children is actually doing here in South Sudan. You're very most welcome, my guest.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the invites.
Yeah, thank you, listener. And that's the voice of Peter Walsh. He's the country director, Save the Children. As we start with our program, Humanitarian Hour, we usually start with we want the organization to tell us what exactly do they do here in South Sudan. If you could give us a bit of what Save the Children do here in South Sudan.
Of course, I'd be glad to. I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues who are working in the POC sites, who are doing extremely hard job, regions, you know, many people who have got extreme needs. But it only accounts for 10% of those that have been affected by the conflict. Mm. Save the Children has a very broad vision and mission. Our vision is to see a world where every child attains the rights to survival, so no child under 5 should die from preventable diseases.
Mm-hmm.
We also believe that every child has the right to protection, so that means a life free of violence. And then every child should receive a quality basic education, be allowed to develop, mm-hmm. and have a participatory part within that development process.
Mm. Okay, I understand Save the Children deals specifically with the children. Is there other programs apart from what already you're doing that is designed at the moment?
Yeah, no, our programs are very broad. We're actually probably the largest NGO in South Sudan. We're currently... have programs in all 10 states, mm-hmm. and a physical presence in 6 of those 10 states. We're, for example, the largest education implementing partner. In 2014, we were supporting, I think it's 145 primary schools,
mm-hmm.
and over 100 alternative learning centres.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, in 2014, we reached over 75,000 children and youth and adolescents.
Yeah, supporting them with what, material or ideas or what?
Well, we're supporting not just the children, we're also supporting the teacher.
Okay.
A school is just a building without a teacher,
sure.
and we really must start there. A teacher in South Sudan can earn more, a driver or a security guard can earn more than a teacher in South Sudan right now.
Mm-hmm.
And there has been progress made on this. You know, the Right Honourable Minister of Education actually stated that there will be a rise in teachers' salaries.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to see this obviously be implemented.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to providing support for teachers, we provide textbooks. We've actually built 2 new schools recently, 4 learning centres, 58 temporary learning
mm-hmm.
spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously people on the move, as in displaced, 50% if not more are children, and they need to continue with their education because these are the ministers of the future,
mm-hmm.
And they have the right for education.
Mm-hmm. Is those temporary learning spaces making impact in the life of children?
Absolutely. The temporary learning space is not just a place to learn. It's also a place for protection and also the vehicle for all other sectors, whether that's nutrition or health.
Mm.
And we've seen a huge impact in providing these temporary learning spaces. We have heard feedback from children themselves about the value of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, listener, you are still listening to Humanitarian News, News Hour, and it is 24 minutes past midday, and we still have the country director, Save the Children, Peter Walsh, here with us, who is taking us through the program, and we are looking at, as Save the Children usually, basically their activities is to deal with the children and how to improve the life of children. And as he has told us, they have some programs, especially in the temporary learning spaces where, in those places, people believe if these temporary places were not there, it was going to be difficult for those children in the protection of civilians. So here in the line of providing these children with the something like food, do you also implement that?
Yes, we do. And we've got quite a large food security program in Djongolay, the Djongolay Food Security Program, which was actually a development program, which we put in something that's called Crisis Modifiers. And with the support of our partner and our donor, we were able to change it to more of an emergency focus. This three-year program, which aims to improve food security for nearly 150,000 people or households. And we do this by helping communities to increase, you know, their resilience, improve agriculture and livestock production.
So also the UN recently released a report which raised alarm about the threat of hunger in South Sudan. And here when we look at children, how much is children under threat in terms of hunger?
Yeah, no, it's very clear. There's 4.6 million people in either emergency or crisis food security thresholds. And we have to do something and do something about that right now. In many areas, such as Upper Nile, they're solely reliant on food aid. In Northern Djongolay, I was in Wat 2 months ago, and there is no market. The only market that there is in Wat is what people carry on their heads by foot from Akobo, and they're purely reliant on airdrops, which are done by WFP.
But are you seeing people around? Though if there is no market, but the few people, how do they survive?
It really is a reliance on food aid, and for food aid to meet the most deprived people, the most that require this immediate food aid, we need unimpeded humanitarian access.
Sure.
And I'll give you an example in Southern Unity right now. Clearly, there's been a heavy amount of fighting. And really what needs to happen, because there are desperate people in the swamps, struggling to get food, struggling to meet their basic needs and fearful of returning to their communities. So what we really would like is a humanitarian pause where combatants would cease fighting for a period, an agreeable period, and allow the United Nations and international organizations to go in, identify the needs, and really provide that immediate life-saving services. And I think this is really important right now.
Okay. Listener, let's first listen to this short break.
Community Connect. Your chance to talk about your community and the issues that matter to you. Join Ivana Musa every weekday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. alongside with Regina Gorle and Lucia John.
Let us talk about society. Let us talk about culture. And let us explore what makes us tick.
Connect with your community on Radio Miraya.
About the nation, across the nation, Radio Miraya.
This is the Humanitarian Hour on Radio Miraya with Ivana Musa.
Welcome back, and this is your Humanitarian Hour with me, Regina Gorle, and listener, we still continue with our program, and in the studio, I have Peter Walsh. He is the country director, Save the Children, here in South Sudan, and we are looking at the activities and the response that Save the Children also take upon their soldiers as they work with the other humanitarian partners in making sure they help the people of South Sudan. And here we are looking at also, I can ask you, it's all well and good preparing for communities to engage in sustainable livelihood practice, but children are dying now as we speak. What is Save the Children doing about it?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And in order for us to reach these children, we need to have that unimpeded humanitarian access. And one of the interventions that we're doing is, along with all our partners, is nutrition. We have four stabilization centers that manage these seriously malnourished children. That's life-threatening hunger with complications. We have 62 outpatient therapeutic centers supporting children with severe malnutrition. And we have 37 supplementary feeding programs for children and pregnant and lactating women with moderate malnutrition. I mean, 2014, if I give you some figures,
yes.
Save the Children received and nursed over 8,000 children who were under five who were severely acute malnourished.
That is yearly or monthly or?
That's over the year.
Okay, over the year.
Yeah.
Mm.
And these went to our outpatient therapeutic centres.
Mm-hmm.
And there's over 13,500 children that we saw and treated with moderate malnutrition.
Mm-hmm. And of course, this one brings me the life of how you can bring the life of children in a healthy life. Right now, you know, the country is suffering from cholera.
Yeah, no, and you're absolutely right. And just to talk about cholera very quickly, Save the Children was a large contributor to the cholera response in Eastern Equatoria State.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We set up two cholera treatment centres, one in Edali, which is in Torrick County, and we set one up in Capoeira North. And then we had a number of primary healthcare centres that we helped set up cholera treatment units.
Okay.
And, you know, it was extremely well led, I must say, by the mm-hmm. Honourable Minister of Health, mm-hmm. Dr. Margaret Ito. And with our partners, you know, I think Eastern Equatoria did a very good job last year.
Mm-hmm.
But we can do more. And
yes,
we are. You know, one thing we did learn from last year is early intervention is critical. And what I mean by that is the hygiene promotion,
sure.
the sensitization, getting out there in the communities early, looking at practices such as where they're obtaining their water and where they're getting their food.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, last year, you know, over 111,000 children have received life-saving treatment
okay.
for the three major childhood killers with our community mm-hmm, case mm-hmm. management programming, obviously focusing on the three major killers, mm-hmm. malaria, pneumonia, and diarrhea.
Mm-hmm. Okay, before we engage our listener, if you could do briefly tell us if you have any challenges in terms of as you penetrated the communities in line of your activities.
Yes, there are always going to be challenges. Obviously, the topography and the lack of resource within South Sudan presents those challenges. But, you know, we have to overcome them. There's no excuses. But what we do also need is cooperation with all partners to ensure that we have completely unimpeded humanitarian access. You know, we have to and we can do more.
So now let's go and engage our listener and so that they can also have, in case they have a question that they would like to ask you and you'll be able to respond. Listener, you can call us on our line, which is 0912-06-2432, and women, you can call us on 0912-06-2439, and you'll be live in the program. We are talking about the activities of Save the Children as they respond in collaboration with the partners in South Sudan in giving services or activities that they help our people here in South Sudan. Hello, Radio Mira.
Hello.
Marhab.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are
yes,
you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great. It's Ageo Mopok Ageo from Wao.
Okay, Ageo. Marhab, Ageo.
Yeah, thank you very much. I have only three questions to address in the studio.
Mm.
Yeah, okay.
You can have two questions. I think it's two is enough.
Yeah, the first question goes like this. What best can the Save the Children do to children who are on the street, in the market,
okay.
and to the children also who are, you know, who are frustrated, who are also in the tribal areas, the conflicting areas, where people are fighting here and there, like Great Upper Nile, areas to do with the Lagos State and all areas which has conflict, which has fighting.
Mm.
What plans do Save the Children have to make sure that children who are there in such areas are safe and are also protected
Thank you.
From killing another? This
okay.
is the first question. Yeah.
Yes.
The second question are their achievement. You know, I can see Save the Children companies operating in the Republic of South Sudan, but I've not seen their achievement.
Okay.
What are their achievements? And in case they have their achievement, can the guests in the studio tell us more about their achievement?
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. That has been Ageo from WOW, and you're most welcome. Ageo is asking what your plan for children who are in the protection to make sure they are safe. That's the first question. And the second one, your achievements.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for the questions. Very good questions.
Mm.
For the first one, in regard to what are we doing about children who are on the streets,
in the streets,
on
the
markets,
protection.
Who
yeah,
are
the
within
markets.
The you know, conflict affected areas, including the tribal conflicts that we're seeing in places such as Lake State. Of course, Save the Children can't be everywhere. We have a physical presence in 6 out of the 10 states, but we work in collaboration with a number of partners. And one of the programs we work on is something called family tracing and reunification. When conflict has occurred, whether this is tribal or the current conflict, children can become separated and unaccompanied. And we've established a mechanism as part of the original people response, and Save the Children lead on this mechanism, which is called family tracing and reunification. This is where we identify those cases of unaccompanied and separated children and work with 14 partners and manage these cases and try and identify, children and their parents, if possible. Quite often, parents can't be found. And there are alternative mechanisms which are, very stringently checked in order to look for alternative caregivers. But we have currently in South Sudan, we have over 8,000 children who are unaccompanied or separated on our database. And this is something that we take pride in. Mm-hmm. But we need to do a lot more. Mm-hmm. In terms of our achievements, Save the Children first and foremost over the last year has grown exponentially. We are reaching many more children than we've done before. We're having impact. As I was saying before, 2014, we had 75,000 children, adolescents and youths who were able to access education because of the support that Save the Children gave to the Ministry of Education, or indeed set up schools themselves. I know we gave, for example, over 2,000 three-seater desks, which we supplied to enhance the quality of learning. Children today throughout South Sudan in many places are still receiving classes sat on the floor. And in many cases, it leads to a poor, learning environment.
All right. Thank you so much. Let's take another caller. Hello, Radio Mira.
Regina Gorle.
Marhab.
Midi
bain min radio taki.
Kwez. Kira kew.
Ah, tamam kalas.
Manut Georgi.
Okay, Manut, welcome.
سيدي الليجيتي ولكل المستمعين وضيفنا في الاستديو السؤال بتاعي بمشي له كده ليه اخواننا بيعون مشاكل زي ديل هل هم دور بشنو زي ناسنا الكبار في وسطنا زي ده ممكن يشوف المشاكل زي ده يعني يجيب يعمل دبول من يكون في وحده وزي اللي هم يعمل تقوي اللي لعمادنا كمان يعملوا الرسالة اللي يعلم في قندو وفي يال المشتتين وفي شوية مشاكل في الشارع هل هو عمل شنو بكلام زي ده عن كيف كيان الناس يعني ما جزء فيه عرامية بتانين بقون قريب في الشارع هل شنو يعني
إذا تكلم ناس في الشارع ولا ناس في كوميونيتيز
في الناس اللي بكون قاعدين يعني في الشارع يعني بغلق قدول وعم فيها عسكر وما عسكري ومجرمين يعني بكره باسم الدولة هل
They organization then accept the children on mon back the shakal fi Malta amni yala ita bagdar wani su fi kalam ali ajadali mon gamulu ze mon gesa do iyal o kaman kef protection of civilian body lo mon
yala al mushatadin yani ma'alad al mutasira fi al arab zi dal yani zi al akhwan al bi'a al mushagil mumkin isamo ma yamshilom yani fi al akhwan tabanin zi al mon georgi ممكن مع أخوانهم كلهم بعمل رسالة في كل مرأة جنان عم تبرواد لهم يعني شبلهم سيكون
شكرا منود actually منود is asking about the children who are scattered on the street and sometimes they do bad things like robbing people and that's what he was asking whether you have a role at that and I try to explain if he could ask something in terms of children how you help them as being on the street then
yeah absolutely good question there are quite a number of children out on the streets. I was in Bor must be 2.5 months ago now, and I saw children, sheltering underneath cars, and these were young girls, and that was to give them some form of protection, which we shouldn't be seeing. And then we have children, obviously, within Juba on the streets. But there's a number of things we can do. And one thing that we've conducted a research very recently in Jongole, Upanao, Unity and Lake State. And we went and spoke to over 360 focal discussion groups. And these are consisting of children and stakeholders who have a, you know, who has a part in the play of the development of a child, so a teacher, a parent. And what resoundingly came out of this research was that despite the emergency, despite the current crisis, we gave them seven sectors, as suggestions of things they might want. And over 25% of the total number we spoke to said that education is a priority.
Actually, they are not going to school.
They are not going to school. And, I mean, before the conflict, 1 million children we know were out of school. And since the conflict has occurred, another up to 500,000 children are now out of school. We know also that 1 million youth have skipped school. They didn't attend any, you know, they hadn't gone through primary education. So these are the areas that we need to really work on. And I know the Minister of Health, the Minister of Education, has launched, with the help of UNICEF, the National Back to Learning Campaign, which is a very ambitious campaign, but it's so important that all partners get behind it. Now, this research paper that we've put together, we're actually going to be launching on the 4th of August, and it's called Hear It From the Children.
Okay, Hearing From the Children.
Yes, and this is where you're going to hear, you know, sound bites from children from these conflict-affected states and Lake State talk about their priorities in an emergency. So for these street children that are, as our caller was saying, are scattered, and the ones that I described that are seeking protection underneath a car, you know, we're going to be hearing their voices, and it's going to challenge us to look at things slightly differently.
Do you have also a role to tell them, you know, some maybe counseling, so that what Manut has said, that some of their result in bad things, they could stop it?
Well, yes, I mean, I would appeal to anyone who takes care of children or has a part to play in their life to really support that child and give them the positive vision of what education can do. You know, the ministers of today are in our communities. They are girls and boys that are either in education or they're not. I was in Kapueta last week. And you know, there's a very different culture down there, as everyone knows. And there are very few children, particularly girls, in school. But you have fantastic role models in South Sudan. You have, you know, the Honourable Anne Ito, you have the Honourable Margaret Ito, you have the Undersecretary, Minister of Labour, Madam Helen Naturo.
Ministers too.
There and obviously, yeah, the Minister of Humanitarian Affairs, for example. These are fantastic female role models. Now, if we could demonstrate, or if we could inspire our children, that if we got these girls and boys into school, they could be the ministers of tomorrow.
Sure. Yeah, listener, you are still listening to Humanitarian Hour with me, Regina Gonle, and of course with me in the studio I have Peter Walsh. He's the country director, Save the Children, and he's taking us through this program. And of course, I know that you have questions that you would like to ask him, and you have a chance. You can call us on 0912-062432. And the women, you can call us on 0912-062439, and you'll be live in the program. Let's go for a short break.
This is the Humanitarian Hour on Radio Miraya with Ivan Omosha.
And I'm Regina Gorle behind the mic and taking you through the Humanitarian Hour program. And of course, I still have the guest here with me in the studio. If you have a question, you have a right to ask your question. Hello, Radio Miraya.
Hello, Regina.
Marhab. Festo Marhab. Yala network taki makwes Festo.
Medication and UN, normally, United Nations human decide we are the advocate.
Mon save the children, my United Nations, they save the children organization.
I am not of your name. So what I'm killing woman, I'm aware of the young lady. If I am young and I think you're not going to have a mother, the unmarked woman who should like to be a woman who got to get to come.
Okay. Thank you so much. That has been Festo, and Festo is saying that as you penetrate to those, in fact, many children who are not going to school are those deep in the villages. How do you penetrate there so that they also get the education?
Thank you very much for the question. I mean, it's about collaboration and identification of these children that are in the most remote locations. There are also an opportunity to start looking at radio schools in other countries across the world. In Save the Children and other partners are delivering school lessons by radio. Mm. And this is one of the options that we're currently looking at. I mean, this could be very realistic for the Toposa population in Kabweta, mm. where they're pastoralists and they are moving around all the time. But those that have been displaced because of the conflict, it is about setting up temporary learning spaces and giving them the opportunity where there is no school to learn. Because as children have said, the school is the place where they feel the most safe.
Okay, I'm also concerned. Festo has asked a very good question about the remote areas. Usually when sometimes organizations like yours and other partners, they help these children in the towns mostly. They help go to those within the county or the big town, in fact.
Okay, well, I can give you an example. And Minkerman is a very good example. Minkerman, before the crisis, only had 2 primary schools. Save the Children has now constructed 19 temporary learning spaces, and our partners have increased that number further. Mm. So it's an area where people had run away, which was essentially the bush, and we were able to provide education in what I would say is one of the most remote locations.
Mm-hmm. Festo, I hope you got your answer there. They say they still get mon bag der wosulufi mahala ligaria inag them and can be provide education le iyan or can bag their support mon. Hello, Radio Mira.
Regina Gorl.
Marhab.
You are connected with Jamie Dwar in Wattenberg as well.
Who?
Jamie Dwar.
Oh, James Dwar. Welcome, James.
Yeah. Thank you, Regina. It's a very good topic. My question together is, so in South Sudan, street children have become major in South Sudan, but as some people, when you see them, they have a great wound that when you see, you cannot see again because of your fear that you are fearing of the wound that the street children have. What are the responsibilities that they're given for those children to be treated and not have a bad wound like what they have here in Lua, particularly here in Lua here now? The street children are very many, even they are even overloading the public.
Actually, you're looking at the children on the street and they need treatment in hospitals or where?
Yeah, in hospital or when they find them with a bad wound like that, what can they give to that person? Or what treatment will they give to him or her?
Thank you so much. That's the question from James Dorr.
Thank you very much, James. And yours is about access to basic services, primarily health for children who are in the streets. Mm. It's a very good question. And really what we have a two-layered approach. Firstly, Save the Children plus other health partners supports, primary healthcare units, primary healthcare centres, county hospitals, etc., in providing the best possible service that it can possibly deliver. But it also, we also have schemes such as community case management, where we have community volunteers out in those communities sensitizing the community over health prevention, but also diagnosing basic illnesses, mm-hmm. the 3 big major child killers, malaria, pneumonia, and diarrhea. Mm-hmm. And they also have the capacity to treat there and then. So, I mean, it's about getting out in the communities and linking the two together and ensuring that everyone is aware of these basic services. An example of this is in Nimele, in Nimele, where Save the Children operates and supports the Ministry of Health with the Nimele Hospital. It's a 172-bed hospital. It's got a plethora of inpatient services, but also an outpatient service. Mm. But then we also get out into the communities, you know, and inform them of the services that are available and how to get to those locations.
Okay. I hope you got your answer there. Hello, Radio Mira.
Hi, Mark Peterson.
Peter Minwen.
Sotaki
Dave Malukida.
Okay.
Fadal Peter.
I
Okay, shukran. Okay, shukran. Okay, they can Peter me Northern Bahar al-Ghazal in Awil. Actually, his question is about health centers, where he said some children can be sick as small as they are 2 months and above, and sometimes they are taken to the hospital, then the maybe medicine is given and they return back home and the child becomes sick again. Do you have any way how you intervene as organizations in health centers actually?
Yes, absolutely. Mm. And this really goes back, sorry, hi Pete from Awil. This really goes back to the community health workers. Mm. The handover of the case from the primary health care unit or center to the community health worker, so they can then, if need be, do a follow-up. But this is a collaborative approach. We need, you know, the Ministry of Health to be supporting this, which in most cases they are, along with our, you know, our donors, and ensure that we do link up, you know, the community health work along with the service-based service delivery.
Mm-hmm. Listener, my guest, do you have your last word you would like to give to the citizens?
Yes, no, absolutely. I mean, firstly, thank you very much for the callers who have phoned in. It's been a very interesting hour or so. I mean, clearly Save the Children, you know, as an organisation, we want to do more and we can do more. Firstly, I'd like to congratulate South Sudan for the ratification of the Convention of the Rights of a Child. And we've recently held a really high-level capacity-building workshop, which is attended by many ministries, the Ministry of Gender, Child, Social Welfare, and Ministry of Justice, and many civil society leaders as well as partners. And it was the first workshop of its kind since the ratification and the fact that the African Charter of the Rights and Welfare of a Child was passed. And through this workshop we raised awareness on the strategic issues affecting children, but we've made a unanimous commitment for doing whatever we can to fully implement the UN Convention of the Rights of a Child, which is fully supported actually by one of the best legislations I've seen in the country, which is the Child Act of 2008, which clearly defines that a child is below the age of 18 years old, and this is South Sudan law. But yes, so I think that in a collaborative approach we can and we will do more.
Thank you so much. And thank you. That has been the voice of Peter Walsh. He is the country director, Save the Children. And nice having you in the program. And thanks for your time. And of course, don't forget also to join us next week on Wednesdays, always where we have Humanitarian Hour program. On Wednesday, we shall be hosting FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization, on that Wednesday that is coming. And thank you for being with us. And I appreciate your time.
This is the Humanitarian Hour on Radio Miraya with Ivan Omosha.
This is your humanitarian news update with me, Regina Gorle. The East African Bloc IGAD. Yes, you're most welcome, listener, on this day of community, on this humanitarian hour, and it is 10 minutes past 12 o'clock, and this is a humanitarian hour with me, Regina Gole, and we shall have a person from the Agency of Save the Children, and we have the country director, that is Peter Walsh, who is going to take us through the humanitarian hour, listener. And of course, don't forget, also later you'll be able to ask your questions so you can find out what is taking place around the globe. Let's first go and listen to the humanitarian hour. Government and opposition delegations to receive new proposals for a compromise agreement in an attempt to bring an end to the conflict. Both sides will be given time to deliberate their proposals before they return to the negotiating table in Addis Ababa in what is hoped will be the last round of talks. Government spokesperson Michael McQuay says the IGAD envoys have set August 17, 2015 as the signing date for the final agreement. McQuay says representatives from both sides will travel to Addis this week to receive the proposal.
In fact, we are not going for consultation. We are only going to receive the proposed compromise agreement. Three representatives are supposed to go on the 23rd. And on the 24th morning, they receive the proposed compromise agreement, and they come back the same day afternoon, that is on the 24th afternoon. And thereafter, we will come and deliberate and discuss the document.
Situation report number 28 on cholera in South Sudan. As of 19 July 2015, a total of 1,212 cholera cases, including 39 deaths, have been reported in Juba and Bor counties in central Equatoria and Jonglei states, respectively. In Juba County, 1,108 cases, including 38 deaths, have been reported from 7 payams. In Bor, 104 cases, including 1 death, have been reported from Malut in Makwech payam and other areas within the county. Parliamentarians hailing from Kajokeji have met with the National Security Minister over the increasing insecurity along the Juba-Kajokeji road. The MPs from the National and Central Equatorial State Legislative Assemblies alerted Mabud Momur about the alarming insecurity in frequent cases of robbery and ambushes. The latest incident reported was on Saturday when 4 people were killed and 5 others wounded in an ambush less than 20 kilometers from Juba. Dabe Francis from the Central Equatorial States Assembly said the minister promised to take appropriate measures to address the insecurity. Meanwhile, bus operators plying the Juba-Kajokeji route says the numerous attacks along the highway are badly affecting business. Francis Duku Yobo is the manager of Kajokeji Transporters Investment Company, whose buses operate along the route. He describes the attacks as becoming too frequent.
It happened several times, and this insecurity has been reported, of course, to the government several times. They know what has been taking place. Unfortunately, nothing happened, and now, like what happened last Saturday, it has affected us badly because that incident has taken life. Eh? It has scared our clients and even the public, because we are offering, of course, services to people. Eh? So it we are not really happy. It affected us badly.
Still on security in Lake States, a commercial driver has survived an ambush in Ural East County. Joseph Chol Maker, who runs a transport business between Ural West and Rumbek Central, was carrying 9 passengers when they were attacked by a group of armed youths in Aluak Town. Maker says the attackers targeted him because he was from the Agar clan. He says he and his passengers survived with injuries.
Just we came from Yerul. When we reached Alualuak, we found the ambush within the town, within Alualuak. I was carrying nine passengers. Then the ambush was shooting us as random in front of the people of Alualuak. And even some of police, they were there and they failed to help. And we were being rescued by in-law, the small boys anyway. Yeah, I was not being shot anyway, but they beat me by the stick.
July 17, 2015, Bor. According to Relief Web, about 51 organized farmers who invested in agro-business in Jonglei State capital for Bor, producing vegetables, maize for sale, have been severely affected by the drought this year and appealed for intervention from relief organizations. The group, which has been operational for 3 years, comprised 18 men with majority of them retired from army. Other members, including returnees from Sudan, after South Sudan succeeded in 2011. 33 other members were women of various ages, majority of them widows of the 21-year-old civil war. This is your humanitarian news for this Wednesday. My name is Regina Gorle. Yes, that has been the humanitarian news with me there. And right now, let's go and listen to humanitarian news from POC side by my colleague Lucy Edward Jubara, who talked to the UN spokesperson Ariel.
Well, currently in our protection of civilian sites, we have over 160,000 people residing in our protection of civilian sites. This is the biggest number ever. The numbers have been growing steadily in the last 18 months, but it is reaching a very worrying and concerning stage and level of numbers.
Let us talk about Juba.
In Juba, we have around 30,000 persons who are residing on our POC site on protection of civilian sites in Jebel. The good news, if I may, is that the second round of vaccination against cholera has started last Tuesday and should be completed any time. The cholera vaccination campaign has reached 95% of the people in the protection of civilian sites in Juba, which is a very, very good thing.
Let's move to Bantu. We know the situation there is really difficult, especially after we have now a rainy season.
Well, Bentiu is the place of concern. Bentiu has been conceived with the new work that have been done in Bentiu for something like 85,000 residents. We've reached the stage of over 100,000. What I'm trying to say by that is that despite a relocation, we have moved 52,000 people to higher ground. The conditions are very difficult. People are very packed. We're constantly trying to work to improve conditions as people keep arriving because there are military operations in Unity. We've got right now an average of 250 people arriving every day, which is 1,500, 1,600 a week, in a place which is not meant to welcome so many people. Conditions are difficult in every protection of civilian sites, but they are particularly drastic in Bentiu. We are looking at how to decongest the place. Again, we've been moving 52,000 people to higher ground, but it is really an issue, and we're realizing that people do continue streaming into Bentiu slowly, but because there is food insecurity, but there is also physical insecurity. And it's very hard to make the difference as to why. Do they come because of military operations, or do they come because of food insecurity? They probably come to our protection of civilian sites for both reasons.
Okay, lastly, we can move to Malakal and how you're getting support.
Well, Malakal is also in the midst of military operations, but we don't have such a stream of people coming into Malakal. The main issue in Malakal is that with the city changing hands so many times, the airport has been very damaged. And I say very damaged. It's been littered by UXOs, which is unexploded ordnance, and it's been littered by landmines, which prevent flights to fly into Malakal. What UNMAS, the United Nations Mine Action Service, has done so far, they've completed the clearing of the airstrip. But they haven't completed the the cleaning of the immediate surrounding of the airstrips, which still prevents flights to come in. The only way we can resupply Malakal is through the MI-8 helicopter, which of course is also a source of worry because an MI-8 helicopter obviously doesn't have the same capacity as a plane, and we wonder how long, or this will be sustainable, but this will be not an easy task to resupply Malakal, be it for the troops, be it for the police there, be it for the civilian staff, or for the residents of the protection of Syrian sites themselves.
Welcome back from that POC updates there with my colleague Lucy Edward Jubara, listener, and you are being with me throughout the program since 10 o'clock up to this hour of the humanitarian hour. Thank you and bye-bye.